The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Michael C. Rupert, I'm back, guys. It is September the 18th, 2011. Had a great trip to Portland, Oregon. Gave a speech up there that's going viral, and it was a pretty important speech. There was a lot of new territory I broke in there. And I had a great time. I got to sing and jam with my friend Lisa Mann at Dove's Garage. And we're going to have some music from Lisa coming up. She's written a new song. We don't have it yet. We will soon, called... We sold our souls to the, quote, the kings of black gold, and it just brought down the house. It's an amazing song. So had a great time. It's been a drain. I'm catching up on a lot of rest after a lot of work, and we're in a little breathing spell right now.
Like you, Mike, out there leading, bringing awareness to these really big challenges we're facing with peak oil and climate change and resource depletion, a lot of these challenges. And so, in about 5 or 6 years ago, Rob Hopkins, who is a permaculture teacher in the UK, was becoming much more aware through your and others' work of, again, these massive issues that were literally at this peak. We're about to enter this era of resource depletion where there's a lot less resources to meet our needs and to run our lives and our society. And so, you know, being a permaculture teacher, which is deeply rooted in the resilience and the wisdom of nature, and indigenous people have always learned to live well in place, he really wanted to take that knowledge and to be able to help spread that with people and create models on how we could rebuild community resilience. And so it's this idea that, you know, we're at this historic moment of transition.
Right.
And it's really, it's not, you know, the idea that government can't save us, business can't save us, we can't do it alone. But if we act together and we act now to build community resilience and to get reskilled and to just really unleash our community genius, it may be just enough, just in time. So it's a deeply community-powered and solution-based response to peak oil, climate change, economic crisis, all these massive issues. And it's, you know, it's exploded like wildfire. He wrote the transition handbook 5 years ago. And there's over 400 official transition towns in 35 countries around the world, and hundreds of more that are unofficial. You know, same is true in the United States. And so it's really just been this global, local, grassroots movement of, you know, people, rather than just wringing their hands about these big issues, of getting to work in their communities and growing food.
Yes, sir. Let me ask this to both of you. Over the course of the last year, we've seen events in the outer world get worse at a much more aggressive pace. Has there been a corresponding change in the enthusiasm or the levels of work that are being put in? How would you say that your members are reacting to events out there?
I could, maybe Caroline could touch on the U.S. I was just at the Transition Network Conference in July in the U.K. and sitting around a table with 35 people from 12 countries and hearing about incredible response of transition in Brazilian favelas and transition response after New Zealand earthquake,
right,
you know, and the uprisings in Spain. And, you know, people are recognizing it's, at least at that level, is time to step up. And so the thing we're looking at is, okay, we need to better communicate to each other and with each other as national hubs. And so the first steps in starting to evolve a national network of hubs that we could share best practices and be able to, you know, burrow down and support the work of these local initiatives. So at that level, you know, it's still a young, rapidly growing movement,
right,
but you know, people, there's a lot of energy and a lot of awareness of the issues, and, you know, there's just a lot of enthusiasm to step up. And, you know, one of the beautiful parts about transition as well, having the inner transition component, you know, sort of dealing with the psychology of change. And so there's a lot of focus on that, too, of, like, how we deal with all the suffering and the challenges. So, that was at the international level. a lot of awareness and a lot of action. I know maybe you could speak to in the U.S., Caroline.
Would it be correct to assume, which is what I'm doing, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that in countries that have been hardest hit by economic collapse, you see the highest levels of activity?
I know that there's in Japan, there's 25 burgeoning transition initiatives, transition towns. So I think that's probably been the country that's been impacted the most.
Yeah.
In this year, so we are seeing an upsurge of transition activities there. So I without looking deeply at all of those countries in depth, Mike, I'd hasten to say that that's correct, your assumption, though.
Okay, let me, I'm playing journalist here, and I'm mining for data. Is there any noticeable difference of focus or level of interest or activity between groups in large cities, middle-sized cities, suburbs, and rural areas?
I think there's transition activities in all those scales. And, you know, God bless the folks in the big cities that really take this on.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing a lot of folks do that. Chicago has become a transition initiative in the last year, and they're intent on having all 77 of their neighborhoods become basically transition initiatives.
Oh, beautiful.
Because there's so many different flavors.
So, okay, let's go back to you guys since last year. What new stuff has TUS brought online? By the way, the website, for all of you who don't know, is transitionus.org. Transitionus.org. It's a great website. There's tons of ways to get involved. They have a great newsletter. Anyway, I had to throw that out to plug you guys. But, okay,
yeah.
What's coming out of your invention room?
I think the main thing is helping new initiatives get online, helping them to form, training leaders to step forward. That's what we were doing. That's what we certainly have done a lot of this year as well. And then deepening the impact of sort of those initiatives that are already sort of on the ground and formed and going through their stages of broadening. It's providing a lot of material for them to create more connections with their local government, their business community, and to begin to develop sort of the Energy Descent Plan, which takes a whole coalition of government and groups to really make a comprehensive plan for a place. And one of the ways that we'll be delving more deeply into a community to actually do that hard work of reducing carbon is to go neighborhood by neighborhood in a program called Transition Streets. And we're just working on that. We hope to launch that in 2012, as well as more more materials, coaching, training, templates for that bigger comprehensive plan, which will be focused largely on policy adoption. And then in 2013, the implementation of those plans. So it's really helping communities from, you know, what do I do now? And to that phase of starting a transition initiative with like-minded people and working to create inclusivity in their place, then working with government to develop these larger sweeping plans and then helping to implement it. So that's what we're about. And we're also very interested in business development that will be low carbon. So in Colorado, they're the first in doing this, but they've created a new venture capital company, a for-profit that has $1.5 million in funding, and their purpose is to catalyze investment in local farms and food sourcing and production, distribution, et cetera, really build that infrastructure.
You raise an interesting point, and we're going to take a little break for our nightly song instead of commercials. But after we come back, you talked about working with government. What I'm seeing is a ton of instability in government. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you both your opinion on what we can righteously expect from government now. But the song I want to play tonight is from my good friend Lisa Mann, who is just this amazing musician. She's been voted best female vocalist in Oregon, blues vocalist for many years now. And I got to gig with her. And she wrote a song I think applies to a lot of people out there who are starting to become aware of the collapse of human industrial civilization. It was written for a friend of hers who came down with breast cancer and just had Pandora's box open up on her. But the title of the song is so appropriate. It's called Wake Me When It's Over. We'll be back in a minute.
That's kind of cool.
You're doing that while I'm doing
that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My good friend, wake me when it's over. I'm afraid most of us don't have that luxury. Right before we played the song, Caroline and Tracy were both talking about working with government, and my question was, what can we really expect from government at this point? You guys have any insights on that?
I think, Mike, one thing before, and it actually ties into the government piece, but when you asked about exciting things going on as well, a really neat initiative that Transition US helped spread this year was the 350 Home and Garden Challenge, where in a single weekend, we had 1,700 actions across the U.S. in over 220 cities and 37 states.
Action.
And those are actions to build local self-reliance, grow food, retrofit homes, that kind of thing.
Excellent.
So that was really great. And, you know, so relative, I mean, I could, this is one of those things of the global local thought, but, you know, here in Sonoma County, we had where the Home and Garden Challenge started, the water agency, every single city, the schools, nonprofits, churches, everybody is on board. And what we're experiencing is that they're really open because they, you know, they lack resources. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of stress. You know, like the rest of us, they're under an immense amount of pressure and don't necessarily have the answers to the problems we're facing. But small, local, grassroots organizations that are either operating on no budget with volunteers or incredibly resourcefully doing a lot with very little, that have real on-the-ground skills when it comes to sustainability and permaculture and local resilience and things we're talking about, have really strong relationship-based, are solution-focused, so saying, yes, we're facing a lot of problems, and are deeply proactive, we're finding that more and more governments are turning to nonprofits to be able to try and help meet needs and, you know, figure out how to actually provide some solutions. So we're seeing an incredible amount of opportunity.
So could TUS become something of a liaison clearinghouse between relocalization efforts and state and local government?
We're definitely, that was one of the things Caroline was mentioning earlier as far as the phases, you know, to strengthen and build the capacity of our existing initiatives to be able to run their programs more effectively and operate better as organizations, while bringing new ones on board and working with local government and providing models of transition initiatives and other groups who are doing that is definitely a key focus of ours. So, you know, the clearinghouse question is a phase along on that, but yeah, we're pretty strongly intent on really modeling and helping our TIs bridge those relations with local government and to, you know, sort of be available and have the solutions on the table when government continues to look and go, wow, we really need a lot of help to figure this out.
What's a TI?
Transition Initiative, sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Recently in the UK, Rob Hopkins, the founder, spoke about sort of having these ideas on the table and out in the front of people and in the public eye in these models, so, you know, when things do hit the fan and invariably there's more trouble, what's the sort of the easy accessible thing that's right there? Like, hey, wow, this is incredible. This works. It's effective. It's low cost. It has a lot of energy behind it. And so same sort of thing with these best practices and creating models to be able to then scale them up if they're what's on the table.
We're coming up on a station break right now. We're at the bottom of the hour. We do have to do one. Most of the time. We're going to do one tonight. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to ask a question of Caroline Staten, the Executive Director of Transition U.S., if you're in an initiative out there somewhere, want to say hi, got something to ask, or Trathan Heckman, you can call 1-888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Or email me directly. We got a couple of questions here at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. We'll be right back after this break. That's the amazing Kristen Vicard, who sang with us at New White Trash. You can find that song and 36 other originals at newwhitetrash.com. We're back after the break, and we've got some emails coming in, and one that I think is a really good one for us to talk about. I need to just mention that the work that CollapseNet has been doing to focus on attention on Japanese incineration of radioactive sludge with cesium, which with a half-life of 30 years, is apparently getting noticed by political figures in the Pacific Northwest. I went into that very deeply on the on my speech because it's a big issue for us. We need to know if Japan is doing that or not, and because our rainy season starts here in October, and we're following that very closely, and we have seen some press awareness that at least Japan knows, has acknowledged that it does have all this very toxic radioactive sludge, and now the people in Japan are becoming concerned they're going to be stuck with it, which means I am inferring that hopefully the incineration has stopped. We just don't need that blowing around the Northern Hemisphere. So we're doing good there. Okay, welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. We're back with Trathan Heckman and Caroline Staten of Transition U.S. And an email came in, and it raises some interesting points. This is from a regular listener, Tom Waits, who is not the Tom Waits, who we all know is our neighbor up here.
But this is from Tom Waits, and he asks, I've been going to transition meetings locally for about 6 or 7 months. I've learned about many different things. There have been a lot of focus on reskilling and getting in touch with common practices that have been lost to our I can get everything I need at the store world. There has been a subcommittee in the group that is working on conflict resolution within the group. As it grows larger, it will surely come into play. I asked the group about conflict resolution coming from outside the group. What happens if you have a person, it's a good question, or a group that has no desire to participate but rather wants to take the fruits of your labors and leave you high and dry? I was somewhat shocked by the response. It was explained to me that we were an all-inclusive group and would welcome outsiders. I put forth the following scenario. It's fall and you're harvesting and putting up stock for the long winter. Some group comes along and wants to forcibly take all you have and leave you with little for that long winter. It's a matter of capacity. If you have resources for 1,000 persons and 3,000 show up, something isn't going to work. What do you do? The answer I got was you just die. I don't know that I could just roll over and take that stance. Any suggestions? Well, these are serious questions, and let me just check in with Caroline and Trayson first. You guys, which one of you wants that?
You go, Caroline.
No, you go, Trayson. That's a tough question, Mike. Hopefully, what the transition work is trying to do is build community relations so that instead of strangers, we know each other, we know of each other, we have more strands of connection in the whole fabric. And people treat strangers differently than they treat people that are familiar. So the task at hand is to make our communities familiar and to build those relationships and to build those relationships of trust. And people respond differently, to folks that they have a bond with. So that's my best answer, and I'm going to turn it over to Trayson to see if you have anything to add.
Yeah, you know, not in the in that specific scenario. I'm sure there's going to be some really difficult scenarios that are already occurring all over for people. But it does, you know, to me it all comes down to relationships. After a decade of community organizing, and you can't have all people at all tables, you know, all decisions. That's not necessarily what consensus decision making is. And so you do get in these scenarios where it's not as easy as to altruistically say, oh, we're going to take care of everybody. But, you know, it does come down to relationships and, you know, really I think that's where the inner transition aspect of transition is really important, is because there's difficult conversations, there's misunderstandings, there's a lot of fear and stress around the challenge we're facing, there's legitimate scarcity issues that occur. And so without anyone specific, but really doing our work to stay peaceful and centered, and have compassion and really listen and hear where people are at, and to communicate well to resolve issues, is, you know, just at the core of any sort of situation. And while also planting food like mad and you know, growing and storing and canning and drying, all those things, you know, and having large emergency stores. So, you know, having a 1,500-gallon rainwater catchment tank in your backyard or whatever isn't just about, you know, you getting enough water. To me, it's like that's also water for your neighbors.
Right.
And having more of those tanks in the neighborhood. So that's why, you know, we're really focusing on, you know, just being proactive, a proactive response to any situation. I definitely don't have that. That's a really challenging scenario to talk about, and talk about it. But
when I was when I spoke at Portland last Sunday in the Q&A, somebody brought up an interesting point about, you know, what happens if I go and grow all this food and when everybody gets hungry, they're just going to come take it from me. And I told them that we had a follower at the Collapse Night who'd been following my work for a long time. Lived in Tennessee, and he went back out to his land out in Tennessee and grew all these amazing crops. But then all of his neighbors got laid off, and they stole all his food. And the one thing that he did not do, which is the one thing I've been yelling about forever, is community. He did not form the bonds with the people who live close to him in advance. And that is it sounds simple that everybody wants to gloss over it, but it's like the most
it's our real security, I think. And that's what we're about with the Transition Streets initiative. Is it's really neighbors on a street really getting to know each other through going through sort of a curriculum together about how to reduce their waste, their water consumption, their carbon, their energy usage, and really getting to know each other in the process. And in fact, the getting to know each other is really the goal, but you do it through having sort of a curriculum to go through.
And you can
the benefits are tremendous.
Yes, yeah. They are.
You could do so much more in most scenarios than you'd think. You know, we have like 60, 70 varieties of food growing in our front yard right now, 13 varieties of apples coming on. We just pressed a bunch of cider today. We transformed the Boys and Girls landscape across the street from our house in a permaculture food forest. And I was just coming home today shortly before this radio interview, and one of our neighbors, they don't have a lot of resources, but she's been seeing the stuff we've been doing for a while, and it's been happening all through the neighborhood. And she came over, and she started asking me questions and what they could do in their garden. And, you know, I'm like, we could dig up 35 plants right now without effort, mm-hmm. you know, and take cuttings and things and populate their whole garden for free with a little sweat equity from some neighbors. And, you know, we're going to set a date and transform the front of her landscape, do grape cuttings and do cuttings from other plants. And, you know, a lot of it, there's so much bounty in these landscapes when you create these more rich and diverse and resilient landscapes. You know, one grape vine, you could take 30 cuttings off it, you know, in the fall after it's fruited, and that's 30 grape plants in your neighborhood. So there's, you know, the more you dive in and start reskilling, you know, there's really a lot that we could create and share. And like you said, Caroline and Mike, it's, you know, getting to know each other, because you're generally not going to steal from someone that you know you have a relationship with.
All right, let's say that we have someone out there listening tonight mm-hmm. who is new to all this. They've just, you know, kind of been turned on. There's a lot of people like that now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of in that semi-frenzied mode with a lot of questions, a lot of urgency. What would they do to get involved with a transition initiative, and what would they expect to experience after making contact with you guys?
You know, I think I'd suggest someone email me at info@transitionus.org with that interest, and I'll put them in touch with folks that are in their vicinity or whoever is closest. So that gives them a place to go and to connect, even if they might want to drive a little bit at the onset. Also, we do a lot of various live conversations and webinars. We had one last week with Rob Hopkins that had lots of folks from around the world on it. And then every month we have an open space audio event, and people from all over the country are sharing what's working for them and their challenges, and it's a rich opportunity to meet people in this audio space and really, really feel a part of something. So those are steps people can take initially. And then we have a lot of resources to help, you know, garner a small group together to start a process of deepening and looking at the issues and then unrolling that through another number of steps in their place to get more interest and more people involved. So it starts with somebody being interested, and then we have a lot of resources from there.
You guys talk a little bit about inner preparation and heart circles and all that. But these are pretty stressful times now, and
there's
a lot of people wondering what to do with a lot of feelings and a lot of emotions. I know you guys have done some good work there, so tell us about that.
Well, I'll start with where I live in Sebastopol, Mike, where you live as well. We have very active part of the transition work that is focused on inner transition. And also, even amongst that work, there's different groups doing different things, some from a more psychological perspective of really dealing with chaos. And how do you do that? And what are healthy practices to live amidst chaos and to come to terms with fears and all of that? So it's more of a sort of practical side. And then there's other sort of, more soulful events where people are singing together and sharing things that they've read or poetry or various things like that. Just a really sort of nice community thing. And that doesn't resonate in all parts of the country, but the inner transition and that really that readiness, this more from a psychological point of view, does pretty much carry forth in all communities. And there's some really great work being done by that. By often it's those people that are therapists or counselors within that place. That's a great niche for them to really help people to deal with this. So it's often led by those people.
Caroline,
with those
you're
skills.
Very weak. Your volume is much less than Trayton's and mine. I don't know if anybody else is having that problem. I just thought I'd check in. I'm
sure sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay.
To add to that piece, Mike, you know, I'd say, and I've done some. One thing that I'm really passionate about, you know, in transition and then even working with, like, Julie Bistrovia and Transition Sebastopol, and that is, you know, around the lens of personal ecology or personal leadership, personal resilience, of really, you know, acknowledging we're living in a very challenging time and it can be very overwhelming to deal with all these macro issues that get laid out for us, as well as just the day-to-day stresses. And, you know, to really claim space to stay clear and organized and centered on what makes us feel good and aware, you know, as Thich Nhat Hanh speaks about, awareness or awakening is the foundation of every kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep, you know, I have all these mantras around me right now. Peace. It does not mean to be in a place where there's no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be amidst those things and be still in your heart. That's a quote right in front of my face. And so having tools and practices and mantras and music and a daily meditation practice and just being relentless to focusing on things that pull you back to your purpose and your vision and
like
your personal resilience.
Like running out of my garden and rolling around with my pumpkins right now.
Right? Exactly. Or, you know, you feel you don't have enough time, plant five types of thyme on your sidewalk like we have. I go out and I have some tea from the garden. It's very grounding having these sort of landscapes. And reconnecting to nature and reconnecting and nurturing community and living your potential. So the inner transition piece, you know, we could be radically more effective and on purpose and recognize suffering as a huge amount of opportunity to transform ourselves and our communities. You know, there's a lot of great potential in it. And so just sort of embracing some of what hurts and scares us and really, you know, just finding other people who get you inspired and get you proactively moving. And then, you know, I totally encourage people to develop the practices you have. Or a lot of people already have practices. You know, like Gandhi said, he said, "I'm so busy today, I'm going to meditate twice as long," which is a different paradigm. So just go deeper with what keeps you clear and lit and aligned.
We just had another email come back in from Tom Waits, who had asked a question earlier. And he raises a question that I recognize at CollapseNet, is that in a lot of major cities, you may have 15 or 20 or 35 people showing up at a meeting, but they're kind of scattered geographically. And my sense at CollapseNet is that it's harder to get local activity going and active in a big city, where people are spread out geographically and have to commute long ways to stay in touch with each other. What do you guys have any observations on that?
Well, I think in Los Angeles, that's 13 million people in the LA basin, and they have going on 9 transition initiatives. So obviously, they've still got a lot of growing to do, but. I think they are a really good model for a large metropolitan area because they do so many things and so many events on so many scales, sometimes collaborating and sometimes really in the various locales where they have a majority of members. And, you know, I think it's just to do a lot of different kinds of events that attract a lot of different people and just keep building. And when there's critical mass in a place, then that could be the beginning of yet another transition initiative. Mm-hmm. So these bigger urban centers are seeding smaller and smaller versions of initiatives.
Okay.
That is really on a neighborhood scale in the end.
In L.A., there was a very active group in Culver City. I'll tell you, got one in Redondo Beach, one in West Hollywood. I was talking with with a military guy over the last week, and he reminded me of the concept of chainmail, where you might have interlocking circles within a larger metropolitan area that act to serve as like another level of support, so that there's communication between Redondo Beach and Culver City or wherever. Is anything like that evolving on its own within TUS?
I think, you know, again, with the folks in Los Angeles, that's exactly what they're doing. They're almost like, just what you said, interlocking circles. There's just various scales of communication and information.
I can barely hear you, Caroline. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
And the board has confirmed for me that you're sounding weak to them, too. I don't know how we deal with that.
I don't know.
Can you speak in your phone a bit more, Caroline, maybe? Is that?
Yeah, it must
oh,
be.
Oh, there you go. That's perfect.
Okay.
Another piece, too, you know, of this, and it sounds a little bit like what you were talking about, Mike, but, you know, say there is this more, you know, you're in a bigger city and you pull people together, 15 people from all across the city, and they're really resonant and aligned and they're big support for each other, and that's sort of one hub in a way. You know, it could be strategically that that group functions to support those individuals to go back and do work in their neighborhood. You know, and so from that lens as well, maybe you go and you get nourished with this more infrequent, say, whatever the community meeting is, leadership circle, whatever it might be, and then you have the support to go back and do your work in your neighborhood and build capacity there.
Okay.
And so that's another way that those sort of efforts could be used. You know, we all, same thing like for, you know, sometimes people have said to me, it's like, oh, you're in Sonoma County, there's so much going on, you know, we're here and there's not a lot of, well, you know, maybe on one level you find people through radio shows like yours or through the net or through the Bioneers Network or something. And so you have sort of your different scales of support. You know, one could be web and tech based, the other could be in your city, the other could be in your neighborhood.
Right.
And that's definitely a thing we're trying to operate at a lot of scales, from your inner transition to your home and garden, to your neighborhood, to your city, to your county, to your region, to your state.
Well, the idea very clearly is that you just got to get your booty out and start moving it around town and getting involved.
Exactly. That's the core.
You know?
Move the booty.
Yeah, and boy, there's a lot of that going on, and what I'm seeing evolve now as things get worse is I'm seeing a strong commonality of interest emerging in viewpoints between my Collapse Net members, between Transition US, but also between Zeitgeist and a lot of Ron Paul supporters who are very active in relocalization.
Wow.
And I'm hoping that this leads to a broad coalition. I don't know if you guys do anything. Are you guys affiliated, aligned with anything? Or are you reaching out to other groups or other?
It'd be a Caroline question.
Yes, we are. But the ones you mentioned, Mike, not so much. So that, you know, that offers a whole other, lots of other avenues. But yes, in terms of sort of, Trayton mentioned Bioneers Network and Common Security Clubs and. Yes Magazine and Bali and yes, various other organizations, but there's many more to go.
Because Zeitgeist has done some really pretty amazing work analyzing efficient ways to set up a resource-based economy, but resource allocation and efficiencies that would seem to, you know, I'm out here and I touch all of these different groups and I say, well, this would help there and that would help there.
Yeah,
and we ought to have just a Congress or a Woodstock for everybody who's on one side of the infinite growth paradigm line, saying no, that's not going to work. We have to start doing something different, and see what kind of magic happens with that. We're down to the last 6-7 minutes. I want to ask a couple of things. What do you guys have going now? Do you have a fundraiser going? Give me your bulletin board stuff right now, please.
Mike, well, we do have a fundraiser going. We're kicking it off. And last year, I know your listeners contributed about $10,000, if not more. But those are, you know, we did get some people that attributed their donation to the Lifeboat Hour, so we know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on December 23rd when we received $6,812 from one of your listeners.
Yeah.
That took us right over the line and gave us the best holiday ever and helped us.
Really?
We met the challenge grant that evening. So we're starting again. We're starting afresh. $100,000 is our goal for this year, and we're kicking it off.
Is it a challenge grant this year too?
We're hoping to seed a challenge grant of $25,000. So nothing as robust as the $100,000
right.
Last year, but we'll start small and we'll build up.
And you definitely, as you know, Mike. I mean, with you know, the scale of the challenges and the rapid unraveling.
Right.
I mean, Transition US is a vast and growing network, but it's a really small organization that's doing its best to really feed and strengthen and support these initiatives as well as grow more initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're incredibly resource efficient. And as you know, we, a lot with your help and your support, has achieved that great matching grant last year. But, you know, it's definitely a really incredible place to invest your resources, to, you know, invest in the world being born while we're becoming aware of what's unraveling in the world.
Right. And, you know, this is a point I make over and over again when I'm out speaking, is that if you're new to what's happening with the collapse of industrial civilization, we have an oxygen mask for you. There are lots and lots of people out here and organizations who have been awake, aware, and preparing for this for a long time. I've been at it for a decade, much longer. But there's lots of wisdom and knowledge out there so that you do not have to reinvent the wheel. And that's the great beauty for hooking up with CollapseNet Transition US, is that there's a lot of skill and experience that's eager and very willing to be shared to make your efforts a lot easier. Okay, we just got a... Okay, I'm just looking at an email that came in, and I'm sorry, was somebody talking about a magic bullet? And we don't have time in the last few minutes of the show. Sorry for that, guys. I'll read it after the show. I kind of feel like you do, I'm sure, sometimes, like we're salmon swimming upstream in terms of the amount of work that needs to be done and how much time we have to do it, and all the things we'd like to reach and be able to do it. But in the last 6 months or so, I've really become much more celebratory in the realization of all of the awakening that we all see happening around us, and wanting to nurture that. And Transition US is a great place to go and to get involved and to start to understand and comprehend and to begin to do the things that you need to do to survive the changes that are coming on us way too fast. We're down to the last couple of minutes. I'm going to thank both of you very much for coming back on my show. We'll have you back soon. And Caroline and Trayson, if you have any big news, please don't hesitate to let me know. I'll announce it on the show.
Awesome.
But I just wanted, you know, you're my neighbors and my friends, and we're very lucky to be here and as involved as we are. And I want to thank you for coming on with us tonight on the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. It's an amazing time to be alive and lots of good people to be in cahoots with.
Don't forget to get popcorn. It's just a movie. Thanks, guys, so much.
All right.
All righty. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
We got like 2 minutes left, guys, and I just wanted to check out. I've been really resting for a few days as a result of the big workload we had getting up to Portland, and I'm enjoying this little lull that we have until the end of the month. But I'll be doing a members-only video update Monday or Tuesday of this week to give you guys an overview. But the end of the month, first week in October, looks to be... I'm not looking beyond that because I'm not quite sure what's going to happen yet. This is for me usually I know what's going to happen, but I'm not quite sure when. But we have this hard date of September 30th and some other hard dates between now and the end of the year. It's the what's that I'm waiting to see, and we'll see where we go after that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This is Michael C. Rupert from the Lifeboat Hour, Sebastopol, California. Happy to be alive and involved in this change of consciousness. We'll be back with you next week. God.
number one source for all things progressive.
Today marks the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because the stronger my heart gets, the stronger my pen gets.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
I'm Gary Nall. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join